Morning. Up right Dr. now Curry. On 94.7 WPDC LP Charlottesville, it's the Mind and Heart Show. For the next hour, it's thoughts and feelings and the way they affect our lives and the world we live in. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470. Now here's your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier.
Charlottesville, and welcome to the Mind and Heart Show. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, your host. We're here almost every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. We got snowed out last week, so we apologize for that. There was just no way we were going to make it into the studio. As I said, this is the Mind and Heart Show. We're here every Saturday morning, and our show deals with all matters of the mind and heart, everything from mental health issues, stress, life transition, parenting, spirituality, and so forth. Please join the conversation this morning. You can visit our Facebook page, which is Mind and Heart Show, and you can post a question there. You can send us a tweet at @mindheartwpvc, or you can email us at mindheartwpvc@gmail.com. On the following Monday, this coming Monday, if you aren't able to listen to our entire show today, you can replay the show. You can stream it at cvillepodcast.com. Just go to that site, cvillepodcast.com, and put Mind and Heart in the search box, and the today's show and previous shows will come up for you to listen to at your convenience. Let's do a quick check of the weather before we meet our guest this morning. It's right now, it's 32 degrees in Charlottesville. We're looking for a sunny day. I don't think we're looking at any precipitation. It's going to be a high of 49 degrees today and sunny. So I think maybe we're in for a little bit of warming up in the next couple of days. So dress appropriately. So this morning, I'm very pleased to have with us Ellen Phipps from the Alzheimer's Association, and welcome, Ellen. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Before we get into some of the specific questions, just tell us a little bit about you, about your background, how you found your way to the Alzheimer's Association.
Well, I think years ago, as a young person, actually all the way back in high school, I did some volunteer work from my home in Long Island at a psychiatric hospital, and I was assigned to the geriatric ward, and I brought my guitar, and I started doing music, sing-alongs with the folks there, and it just, what really struck me was what a difference that little bit of connection and singing and talking about what we were singing about and how people went from kind of, you know, being slouched over and half asleep to really waking up and being involved. And I just thought, you know, maybe I can make a difference. They seemed to really enjoy it. They wanted me to come back. And I think also, I had incredible positive influences of older adults in my life as a young person. So I just felt by the time I got to college, I knew I wanted to work with older adults. Mm. And one thing led to another. But by the time I got to college, I figured out I wanted to specialize in therapeutic recreation. So I got a degree in recreational therapy. So I'm a certified therapeutic recreation specialist.
Okay.
And then about 5 years ago, I ended up going back to school and I got my master's in gerontology from VCU.
Oh, terrific.
And I'm now, in addition to being vice president of programs and services at the Alzheimer's Association, I also am adjunct faculty at VCU. I also worked at JABA here in Charlottesville for about 6 years. I ran the Adult Day Center there. So I have a really nice mix of direct care, experience, frontline and big picture administrative overseeing and organizing in an effort to try to reach more and more people.
Right. And so you know our good friend Gordon Walker from when you were
I certainly do. Gordon and I go way back, and he is a great, great guy. In fact, I was just recently working on a committee with him, even though he was calling in from his new home in North Carolina.
Yes.
But I certainly do know Gordon very well. And he's great guy.
And before we again get, I have tons of questions today. We probably won't get to them all, but you've written a book recently.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, the book is called Connections, and it's really based on my background as a therapeutic recreation specialist and gerontologist. The book is co-authored with my friend and colleague, who at the time was at UVA in speech and language and communications, Dr. Barb Braddock. She has since moved to St. Louis, but we continue to work together. The book is it's a color-coded guide that helps people that are living at home with the disease, families that are living at home, to engage their loved one mm-hmm. with meaningful activities.
Okay.
So basically, what tends to happen is with families, very common and very understandably, you know, well, you know, mom used to play bridge. Well, she can't do that anymore because of the Alzheimer's.
Right.
She's too confused and she can't play bridge anymore. And she's, you know, messing up the bridge games and nobody wants to play with her or whatever.
Okay.
So, you know, what we found is if this is something that was a real passion for this person, there are ways to adapt a game, simplify it, change the rules a little bit, do another type of card game that might still bring the person great pleasure. Without causing frustration for them or anxiety.
Oh, that's terrific.
And so you really have to look at what's really key and probably one of the principles of therapeutic recreation that's intertwined in this book is it's not a cookie cutter solution. You can't say, well, you know, at this stage do this or at this stage do that. What you need to do is look at the individual person, look at their past leisure interest, their current level of function, which is key. And then with that, you can match activities and adapt the activity to keep them engaged at a level that's going to work really well for them. We don't want them to get bored. We don't want them to be offended that it's too childish or too simple.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we don't want them to be frustrated. So it's, how do you find that balance? And, you know, it's not a hit or miss type of situation. You can, you know, we provide in this book, we provide tools and surveys and, you know, different assessments to figure out how to get those answers. And so it's been very successful. We actually, the Alzheimer's Association, about 4 years ago, we got a federal grant from AOA, Area Agency on Aging, Administration on Aging, from the federal government. Mm-hmm. To research the effectiveness of this intervention, that we were able to send people out into their homes, into homes of people living with Alzheimer's and other types of dementia. And we were able to test the effectiveness. We collaborated with UVA.
Okay.
And so it's evidence-informed.
Wonderful.
And so it's pretty exciting. And now Health Professions Press out of Baltimore, they have the final draft, and I'm going to emphasize final draft. It's been a long road, and we are looking to see that book in print in 2016.
Wonderful.
So it's very exciting.
Congratulations. So as baby boomers like myself get older, this is something we all worry about. And so I wonder if you could just begin by telling us exactly what is Alzheimer's disease? We hear it so much. And yet a lot of us, I'm sure, couldn't really define it, except maybe just dementia in some form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Alzheimer's disease is actually a progressive degenerative disease of the brain that affects memory, But not only memory affects judgment and eventually the ability for a person to get through the activities of daily living, such as feeding or bathing themselves, getting themselves to the bathroom. So it's a disease that is a fatal disease. There is no cure for it currently. And you raise an important point about the baby boomers, because there's a lot of us baby boomers out there that are very worried.
Correct.
And I think a couple of things that I would like to say about the disease. And number one is it is not a part of normal aging.
Okay.
So Alzheimer's disease or other types of dementia are not a part of the normal aging process. And we all probably can rattle off 5 or 6 people that we know that are 98, 102 that are sharp as a tack, right?
Yes.
So we know it's not a part of the normal aging process. It's a disease process. It's okay. A red flag. And so if we're noticing signs that maybe we're concerned about, we highly, highly recommend that people get those checked out.
Okay.
And we can talk about some of those signs.
Okay.
But we do recommend that people get those checked out, because, number one, it could be something else that's treatable that could be causing the memory loss or the confusion. So it's really important to go ahead and get a diagnosis. But the other thing that happens is often people don't get things checked out and they wait and the disease progresses. And then what happens is at the association, we'll get a phone call because a family's in crisis.
Okay.
Mom got in the car and she drove off and she's lost.
Lost. Yeah.
We don't know where she is. We don't know how to find her. Dad was walking in the neighborhood and he wandered off and we don't know where he is. We can't find him.
Golly.
So rather than wait for that crisis, I think it's really important for people to recognize some of the signs that something might be out of the ordinary. It may not be Alzheimer's disease. Again, it could be something that's treatable.
Okay.
But we really try to emphasize the importance of getting checked out, going to a neurologist or going to their family doctor to start.
You should start with a family physician.
Could start with a family physician. And then possibly if things are looking like it's a little, you know, there are more questions, they're not quite sure, going to a neurologist, getting a full workup. But there is no single test. It's not like you can get a blood test, right, and say, okay, you have Alzheimer's disease. So what they do is a process of elimination. They'll, you know, they'll maybe do a brain scan, look at the brain, and they'll do a blood test and urine analysis and ask a whole lot of questions, get some feedback from the family. But you can really get extensive testing here in Charlottesville.
Yeah, we're very fortunate with UVA Medical Center.
Exactly. And there are lots of neurologists in the area
as well.
Whereas in some of the more rural regions that we serve, it's a little bit more difficult.
Challenging,
yeah. And so then folks will start with their general practitioner. But there are so many good reasons for getting that early diagnosis, because number one, if it is not Alzheimer's disease and it's maybe a vitamin deficiency or depression, which can mimic confusion and memory loss, if those things are treated and the person's okay, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
If it does look like Alzheimer's or another related dementia, then we want the person themselves to be involved in planning for their own future as early as possible.
Okay.
And, you know, really being a part of that care team, pulling their team together and really having a voice, because as a progressive degenerative disease, you don't want to wait too long for that person's involvement.
Yes.
So the earlier, the better.
That's a great idea. Yes.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit, if you would, about symptoms and what are some of the
sort of the
things
warning,
that you look for, warning signs, symptoms, whatever you would
do. You know, so I think one of the big things is I like to use this analogy because it's something that I personally do all the time, which is I'll go to the mall, even our little mall here in Charlottesville, and I'll park my car and I'll run into the mall. And like 6 hours later, after looking at all the shoes and the bags, and I'll come out and I'll be, oh my gosh, where's my car? And, you know, that was great when my kids were little because we could play that game, you know, where's mommy's car? And they were pretty good at finding it. But they're all grown and out of the house now, and they don't come with me anymore to the mall. So, but does that mean, should I be worried?
Right.
I misplaced my keys. I can't find my keys. Should I be worried? Does that mean I have Alzheimer's disease? And the answer is basically no.
So when I walk out of the room and forget where I was going and I have to come back and try to remember, that's not necessarily early Alzheimer's.
Correct. Okay. Because, you know, the neurologists say that we're all allowed a certain amount of, you know, mishaps and mistakes. Because why? We are so busy juggling, you know, if you think about everything that most of us are trying to juggle between family life and work obligations and maybe volunteer work and then maybe outside jobs.
It's a lot.
Travel. I mean, everybody is so busy and trying to juggle so many things. And so it really is very natural to have these little mishaps. And part of it really has to do with the fact that we're maybe not necessarily focused on that one thing, because when we drive to the mall, I'm thinking about the boots and the shoes and the bags that I'm going to be purchasing. I'm not focused up about where I am and
with the car,
where I'm parking. The minute I turn my focus and purposefully, conscientiously take a moment to say, okay, here I am. I'm in line with the B for Belk. And when I turn around, I can see the path to my car. And if I just took a minute to digest that before running into the mall, I am way less likely to get lost. I'll remember that when I come out.
Yes.
So it has to do a little bit with just kind of being a little more focused.
Paying more attention.
Yeah. Likewise, when you lose your keys, most of us are able to think, well, okay, I had them yesterday. I had to get home yesterday. So I had my keys when I got home. So I've either left them in the car, maybe I locked them in the car. No, I was wearing that red jacket. I think maybe I put them in the pocket of my red jacket. We can retrace our steps.
Yes.
And we can think about, you know, maybe where it's likely that the keys will be. Now, a person who's experiencing early signs of Alzheimer's or another type of dementia will not be able to retrace their steps like that.
Okay.
Also, even if they took the time to think, this is where I'm parked at the mall, that might be gone by the time they come out, so they actually have no recollection of having done that. So there are some serious differences.
I see, yes.
And what we say is, at the Alzheimer's Association, what we really talk about is symptoms and signs that begin to really disrupt daily life or daily functioning. That's a time to be concerned. So right now, you know, if we're having these little mishaps, but we're still making all of our appointments, or most of them, and, you know, we're making our lunch dates and we're doing our work okay.
And not ending up on the other side of town and wondering how I got there.
Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So when those things begin to be a little more disconcerting, or things that, that are just beginning to affect the ability to function. For example, here's another one that some of us, again, myself included, and I remember doing this once not that long ago with a colleague, forgot that I had a lunch date with her. I don't know, something, maybe I wrote it on the wrong date on my calendar. And so the first I know is she's calling me from the restaurant, "Are you on your way?" Well, I didn't get that message until about 3 hours later.
Oh, golly.
And I had no recollection. Well, as it turned out, I did have a recollection. I knew I was supposed to meet her, and I felt terrible, but I had written it on the wrong day on my calendar. So what happens when a person has Alzheimer's disease and they get that call, "We're supposed to be meeting for lunch." "I don't remember having a lunch date with you. Did we make a lunch date?"
Okay.
"I really don't remember." So again, that's a little bit of a difference. Now, what I would say is anybody that isn't sure if they should be worried or not, you know, it doesn't hurt to get things checked out because you can always just get that baseline.
Okay.
So if you're thinking, you know, I am feeling more forgetful, or maybe I'm having trouble with word retrieval, this is another sign. People are suddenly not able to come up with the right words, and it's happening more frequently. If that's the case and you're really troubled and worried, definitely get it checked out. Like I said, people can come to us the minute they get that diagnosis, and the earlier the better, because then we can really help.
Yeah.
But if they wait until they're in crisis, you know, there's so much they could have been doing and we could be doing with them before it gets
to that
point.
Okay. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. And this morning our guest is Ellen Phipps, who is from the Alzheimer's Association. She's the vice president for programs and public policy there, and we're talking about Alzheimer's disease and all the different aspects of it. Before we get back to our conversation with Ellen, again, a quick check of the weather. It's about 32 degrees this morning, sunny, and we're looking for a high of 49 today, so we'll probably get some more melting and no precipitation or very low likelihood of precipitation. So if you are just joining us or can't finish the program, please go to SevillePodcast.com on Monday, and you can stream or download the interview with Ellen. And she's given us some really good information about Alzheimer's disease. So, Ellen, are there other symptoms that we should know about? You've talked about some pretty major ones. Are there others that might be a flag or would suggest it's time to get a professional involved?
You know, it's interesting, over the holidays, often adult children will visit their parents. Maybe they haven't seen them for a year or longer.
Right.
And they sometimes will notice changes in their parents that would maybe otherwise be kind of subtle, but, you know, because they haven't seen them in so long, it's like, wow. And sometimes it can be something like simple as hygiene, and maybe their mom or their dad was somebody who was just really always very immaculate, very clean, always presentable, and they noticed that, wow, mom hasn't showered or changed her dress in 3 days, and that can be a pretty significant sign.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that sometimes gets noticed, we hear this a lot, is people will stack up the mail,
not open it.
And just adult children will go visit mom and dad and then just find these hidden piles, or maybe a lot of it's thrown in the waste basket and they're just, you know, not dealing with that. That would be another pretty serious, significant sign. The other thing is, and I like to highlight this as well.
Okay.
Because one of the signs could be having trouble with the checkbook. Okay, so maybe doing the bills. So if the person that's doing up the checkbook is someone who's always done it their whole lives, that's what they've done, and now there's some significant mistakes and things are kind of a mess with the finances, that can be a really big sign.
Okay.
But I want to point out that if the person doing the finances or doing up the checkbook has just started to do that and they've never really done it, you can allow for mistakes. So it's always circumstantial.
Okay.
It's always, you have to take everything
in context.
You really
makes
do.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and what about, a typical age of onset? I mean, is there such a thing as, 65, your risk goes up, 70, your risk goes up? I mean, what do you know about onset?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the greatest risk of getting Alzheimer's disease is actually age. So that is true. The longer you live, the more likely your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. Although, I'll reiterate, it's not a part of normal aging.
Okay, that's important.
So we're looking at about 1 in 8 people that are at risk over the age of 65. And by the time we get up to 85, we're looking about 1 in 2 or 1 in 3.
Good golly.
So it's really, that is really a significant amount of people. Right now, there are over 5 million Americans with Alzheimer's disease. And that's expected to triple by 2030, 2050. Those numbers are expected to triple.
And will bring with it huge burdens financially and in terms of caretakers in the larger society.
Right, because for every person that's diagnosed or that has Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia, you have to add about at least 3
Golly.
Caregivers for that person. So it's a disease that affects the whole family. So if a parent has the disease, the children are going to be affected. The spouse is going to be affected. You know, it's just, it's highly impactful. And you raise another really interesting point, which is that we do tend to think of Alzheimer's disease as an older person's disease. And I'm talking about age being the biggest risk factor. However, it's really important to highlight that there is something called younger onset Alzheimer's disease, and we are getting much better at diagnosing okay. younger onset, and we're seeing a lot more of that. This does have more of a genetic component,
okay.
whereas older onset does not.
Not necessarily.
This is linked to a couple of genes that have been identified. So you'll see, it's kind of interesting, some of the research has looked at families who have, large families that have maybe 8 to 9 children and like 6 of them have been diagnosed with younger onset. Now, younger onset we typically think of as under the age of 60.
Okay.
And we've seen that.
Someone in their 50s, perhaps.
40s.
40s
even 30s.
Oh, my gosh.
30s, 40s, and 50s. And so this is really brings on even unique challenges, because in terms of services, people in this age group aren't yet eligible for, say, Medicare. They're still working. They're raising teenagers often or young children. So this presents some very unique burdens and stresses
imagine. Yeah. My 92-year-old mother, who is fairly sharp, although her short-term memory is really deteriorated, but her primary care physician has told us that she has something called sundowner syndrome, which is happens when the sun goes down. She gets confused. She gets a little more delusional. Is that a symptom of, can be a part of Alzheimer's?
Absolutely,
as well?
Yes.
Can you tell us more about what is sundowner syndrome?
It's very common. And what tends to happen is in the late afternoon when the light changes, the natural light changes, for some reason, this can cause a little bit more confusion in persons with the disease. Now, when I used to work at the adult day center at Jabba, we would have to make a really concerted effort at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And there are lots of things going on. The buses are starting to come to pick people up and the light is changing and people are just getting a little bit more anxious. So the best thing to do during those times is to really try to engage the person in a meaningful activity, you know, maybe going for a walk or, you know, playing a game of cards or watching mm-hmm. something, listening to music, something like that to keep them engaged, because it can be very disorienting for them. And confusing as well. And my own father is actually experiencing that. He's just turned 90, and he does have Alzheimer's disease, and he lives in a facility in Texas. And he also has some private companions that sit with him as well. And we've just recently had to change the shift because we were doing early morning, and then the caregiver was leaving at 3, but then he started really getting more restless and confused and agitated, actually, in the afternoon. But now that we were able to change the shift and he has somebody there, sometimes it just takes somebody to reassure the person. Often what happens is with a person with dementia, they don't know what to do next. So here I am sitting in a room by myself. What am I supposed to be doing? Where am I supposed to be going? Am I supposed to be busy? This, imagine the anxiety this would cause. It would cause that to any of us. So sometimes just having somebody there to be reassuring, saying, no, it's okay, we're going to go to dinner in a little while, but in the meantime, why don't we look at these photos mm-hmm. of your family? Because you have some beautiful pictures of your family. Or, you know, why don't we do some painting while we're waiting?
Yeah, that's very helpful to know. Is there a definitive test that we know? I know earlier you said you alluded to the fact that there possibly is not. But is it a diagnosis of exclusion?
It is. It's basically let's go through and rule out everything else. Let's rule out, you know, depression
or thyroid or pneumonia,
exactly, or tumors. Let's rule out all of these things. Let's rule out Parkinson's. Rule out all of these other things that could possibly be causing the symptoms. And then we come up with a diagnosis of probable Alzheimer's disease. Okay. We used to say that you could not make a definitive diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease until autopsy.
I've heard that.
Yeah, but really, we don't say that anymore because clinical diagnosis is usually within 96-97% accuracy.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we've gotten so much better at diagnosing. Okay. And when it's incorrect, it's usually because it's maybe a related dementia. So maybe they thought probable Alzheimer's, and actually maybe it turned out to be Lewy body dementia or some other type of dementia.
Or vascular dementia.
Or vascular dementia, yes. Yeah.
But certainly, if there is autopsy, they're pretty clear indicators. Then the pathologist can look at the brain and say, "Boy, that person really had a bad case."
Right, the amyloid plaques and the neurofibrillary tangles, which are the hallmarks of the disease, that were, you know, these are sort of these substances, sticky substances that you know, stick to the brain and they cause the death of neurons.
Oh, is that what?
And
that's the process.
Happening.
Okay.
And so typically the disease starts in the area of the brain called the hippocampus.
Right.
And then it, and that's why, that's responsible for short-term memory.
Short-term memory, yeah.
And so that's often the first thing to go. I worked in an adult day center in England, and we used to have a very full schedule with a wonderful lunch, and 9 times out of 10, I would get calls from family caregivers after the participants got home at the end of the day saying, Joe said he didn't have lunch today, you know, and we're wondering how come you're not feeding them. And I said, no, we had a really, in fact, Joe ate really well. So it led me to start this program of sending little slips home the end of the day to say, you know, Joe ate really well today. And he also enjoyed his time at the pub next door because we went to the pub to go play Skittles or something. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah.
And is Alzheimer's itself fatal, or is it that other things happen, or people just die of normal age-related issues? I mean, what's the thinking?
Alzheimer's is a fatal disease.
It is a fatal disease.
And some people would maybe disagree with that statement, but basically what happens is that because of the damage to the brain. So as I was saying, the disease process starts in the area of the brain of the hippocampus, and it gradually spreads, affecting all areas of the brain. So it's going to affect judgment and speech and ability eventually to perform the activities of daily living, such as feeding yourself. Eventually, the person with this disease will end up basically in fetal possession, bedridden. And this is because of the damage that's happening to the brain.
In the motor cortex or in other
exactly.
parts of the brain that would affect even swallowing.
Swallowing, exactly. So the
fine motor, gross motor.
Exactly, yeah. All of that. And so, yes, you know, will the person possibly get pneumonia and then die of pneumonia? Yes, but why? Because of the damage that has been done to the brain due to Alzheimer's, and swallowing
so
will be affected.
Exactly. Pneumonia. So
yes.
It really can cause the conditions, excuse me, which would result in that person's death.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think you can get, you know,
you could quibble over that.
You could quibble. You could get pedantic, but yeah. Alzheimer's disease is a fatal disease. And for which there is no cure. And I think this is where I want to say why the Alzheimer's Association is such an important organization, because this organization is highlighting the importance of raising awareness, raising funds for research,
yes,
to find a cure for this disease. And this is just critical. And we've made such strides in such a short amount of time. Because if you think about it, the disease was first described in 1906 by Dr. Alois Alzheimer, German psychologist.
That's the name, yeah.
Psychiatrist. Yeah. And then, but yet, most of the research and most of what we know today is really because of the accelerated work we've been doing on it in the last maybe 15 to 20 years. So maybe it's been around since 1906, but we have not been
really
looking at it and dealing with it since 1906.
Okay.
No way.
Okay. So tell us, I'm concerned about the time because there's so much to talk about in our
and
hour.
And here I thought, what are we going to talk about for an hour?
You're doing great. But I wanted you to say a little bit about the resources available to families and caregivers and patients with Alzheimer's, resources available from the Alzheimer's Association.
Well, first of all, my number one message is don't wait.
Okay.
Don't wait to call us.
Do not wait.
Okay. Do not wait, because we can help with planning for your future. Once you've got that diagnosis, first of all, if you're worried, go and get that diagnosis. Once you get that diagnosis, pick up that phone and give us a call. We have an 800 number. It's available 24/7, 365 days a year. And that number is 1-800-272-3900.
1-800-272-3900. Okay.
And we really encourage people to call, like I said, any time of day or night, with any kinds of questions. Give us a call. We can connect people with services from the get-go. So, for example, maybe you've just been diagnosed, and maybe you're still working and still driving. I mean, people can function very highly. That's another thing that people forget. You know, they think, a lot of times people think diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, and then immediately jump to this image of somebody in a wheelchair who, you know, maybe can't function. Not the case. I mean, there are people like you and like me that are, you know, highly engaged in their work and driving, and they have this disease. Well, you know what? We can connect them with other people in the same boat just for someone to talk to about what they're going through. Or maybe they have questions about, okay, now I have this diagnosis. What should I be thinking about? You need to get your financial ducks in a row. You need to make sure you are the voice for your own future and how you want to transition. You can begin to have conversations with your family, such as, when I can't drive anymore, this is how I would like for you to handle that with me. So that other people aren't just automatically taking over your life. You want to remain having your voice heard in that process.
Okay. And so I'm guessing you would also be a resource for just referral information. Oh, I'd like to see a neurologist. Oh, where can I see a neuropsychologist? Where can I join a caretaker's group?
All of the above. Okay. Absolutely. We can connect people with all of the local services. If the person's maybe a little bit further down in the diagnosis, sometimes people will call us because we're at home all day long. We don't know what to do all day. And I need a break. The caregiver is saying, I need a break. Well, Adult Day Services over at JABA. Fantastic.
Oh, that's such a wonderful
program.
Resource.
Just fantastic. Yes. And then there's another Adult Day program in town now with PACE, which another wonderful resource. Home health care, maybe just a little bit of home care. You know, you have to first establish your goals. And 9 times out of 10, families will come to us, okay, we've got this diagnosis. This is what we're dealing with. And our goal is to keep mom or dad or spouse or whomever at home with us as long as possible. That's a very common, understandable goal for people. Well, it's certainly very possible, but you're not going to do it alone.
Right.
You're going to need, if you want to keep somebody at home for as long as possible, you're going to need to rely on all of the wonderful resources in this community. And that's where we can come in and help connect you to those resources. You can even look at bigger picture and join in clinical trials. Get involved. Get involved in clinical trials so we can, you know, eventually. And I'll tell you, clinical trials, they're always looking for healthy brains as well as people who are diagnosed. So caregivers, family members, we can connect them with clinical trials. People can get involved in our Walk to End Alzheimer's. October 8th in Charlottesville.
Say a bit about that. That's such an important community activity and fundraiser.
It's a great community activity. It raises awareness, and it's our biggest fundraiser for helping to support programs and services and resources in the area. We provide a lot of educational programs. We do conferences. We have family education programs. We can meet with families one-on-one with our clinical social workers. These are free of charge. People don't pay for these programs.
Right.
So come on out and support the Walk to End Alzheimer's. And then we have other opportunities as well, like our Bill Howard Golf Tournament each May. And then we have something called the Longest Day, which bridge groups, the National Bridge Group, is playing bridge all day long for, you know, 16 hours and raising money. So there are a lot of different ways to get involved, just depending on what your particular interest is.
Yeah, that's great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7 FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we've got a few minutes with our guest today, Ellen Phipps, who is the Vice President of Programs and Public Policy at our local Alzheimer's Association chapter. And we've had a really fascinating and important discussion this morning about Alzheimer's disease, something that we've all been touched by either directly or indirectly, or probably will be in the future. You know, Ellen, I'm concerned about the burnout on the part of caregivers. I know I have friends that have kept their parent or spouse at home with a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and they just, you know, there's this whole notion of compassion fatigue, and they just absolutely are, you think they're going to collapse any moment from the stress of this. You must run into that all the time with your families.
All the time. And number one, call us.
Yes.
Call us, because we have some phenomenal programs that have had such an impact. For example, we have an Arts Fusion program for folks who are living in the community, living with their families, and they can come together as a group every month. They can, what we typically do is we'll meet at maybe the Fralin Museum here in Charlottesville.
Oh, yeah.
We have a memory cafe where folks can just get together. We meet at the Sweet House, and they just informal discussion, just meeting with other people who are in the same boat. We have caregiver support groups. Take advantage of these programs.
Absolutely.
Because what caregivers say about these programs is they couldn't have done this without these programs. They make friends. They meet people. We have one support group that has been going on for years and years and years. This is a group that has bonded in such an amazing way. They are life support for each other. You know, depending on your particular personality, some people think, oh, I'm not going to go to a support group. It's kind of touchy-feely. I don't want to do that. Well, number one, what we typically do in support groups is we learn strategical tips from people who have been down that road. So, for example, my wife is up all night, you know, we don't know how to deal with this. Well, the other person in the group says, oh, when we had that issue, this is what we did. You know, we learned that keeping her really active during the day, going to the adult day center, that really changed her schedule around, and now she's sleeping better at night. So people need to really try these different things. Or maybe a support group isn't for you, but the memory cafe, that might be for you, because you're just meeting in a coffee house with other people. You're enjoying coffee and tea and muffins, and you're just talking. And what you're doing is you're just meeting other people who are in the same boat. And a lot of times, even the best of friends, if they haven't been going through this, if they haven't walked in your shoes, as supportive as they would like to be, it's really hard for them to really understand what it is you're going through. So talking to others who are in the same boat can be incredibly helpful. And then those people that don't want to talk to anybody, they can just come in and meet just one-on-one with our licensed clinical social workers, and they can talk about planning for the future. They can talk about strategies, all of it free of charge. So don't wait until you're in crisis.
Okay.
Call us.
Yeah, and let me just emphasize that for our listeners. I mean, what Ellen is sharing with us today is a tremendous resource in this community. And as we said at the top of the show, as we get older and the baby boomers age, this problem is going to just expand exponentially probably. So these are very critical issues, and this is a really important topic and something for all of us to think about, both in terms of our aging parents, of our own aging, and just what might be out there in the future. We don't know, but this was certainly a way to get prepared. Ellen, we've just got a few minutes left, and I wanted to have you talk a little bit about how folks can reach you, how they can contact the Alzheimer's Association, what are the best ways to do that, because I know folks that are listening are going to want to know how to get in touch.
Well, number one, we have a wonderful website with a plethora of information, and in fact, our website even contains a caregiver center just specifically with information for caregivers. All of our brochures, everything can be downloaded. So number one is go to the website.
What is that website?
It's alz.org. And then for local, that's the national website,
okay,
which has a ton of information. You want some more local information, it's alz.org/CWVA for Central and Western Virginia chapter, because our chapter covers 52 cities and counties in Central and Western Virginia.
Okay.
So our headquarters are here in Charlottesville, but we reach out to Harrisonburg, Lynchburg, Danville.
Southwest Virginia as well.
Yeah, we're all over the place.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
52 cities and counties. So definitely the website is wonderful. We've got that 800 number available 24/7, 365 days a year. It's 1-800-272-3900.
Okay.
And if you see a program online that you're interested in, for example, we are bringing to this area on May 3rd in Culpeper, internationally known dementia expert Tipa Snow. Those who are out there in the field who work in facilities know this woman. She's a rock star in terms of providing education. She's going to be presenting an all-day workshop in Culpeper at the Daniel Technology Center, May 3rd. I believe it's 9 to 4. Call us for more information. We can get you registered for that.
And if someone wants to make a donation, can they go to your local website and do so online? Or
absolutely. Okay. Yes, they absolutely can. And they can also call us. They can call the 800 number to make a donation. But we do rely on private funds. We have our walks coming up. We have the longest day activity in June 21st. Plenty of opportunities to get involved. And the last thing I'm going to say is another fantastic way to get involved is to join our public policy movement. We have a state platform, we have a federal platform, and it is because of the work of our association that Congress just approved $350 million for Alzheimer's research.
So there's that advocacy piece.
Absolutely.
That's really important.
And that's an easy way to get involved. We're talking about writing letters, calling your congressman, coming up to our advocacy forum in Washington, D.C. in April. There's nothing cooler than watching Capitol Hill turn purple, because purple is our color.
Yes.
And when you've got 1,000 people purple on Capitol Hill, let me tell
you,
impressive. It's powerful.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ellen, for coming in this morning. We got through about half of the questions I wanted to ask you. So
well, I'll have to come back.
We may have to have you back. Absolutely. You've been great. So you've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. I want to also give thanks to my producer today, Kevin Chapman, who's with us, keeping everything running smoothly. And thanks again to my guest, Ellen Phipps, of the Alzheimer's Association. A couple of programming notes. We will be off the air for the next two Saturdays. There'll either be a replay of an older show or some other programming as I'm going to be away. We will be back here on February 20th. And we'll make up our show from last week, which we were when we got snowed out. So look for that information on our website or on our Facebook page, Mind and Heart. Coming up next at the top of the hour is Straight Talk with Andra Hakes. And I'm not sure who Andra's guest is today, but she always has a lively discussion and some important information to share with you. So stay tuned for that. So I will see you in 3 weeks from today, and we will pick up then. And in the meantime, if you have further questions about the program today, the website is alz.org. And the local website, give it again, if you would, Ellen, please.
It's alz.org/CWVA for Central Western Virginia.
And as Ellen said, there's a wealth. I've looked at that website before this morning. There's a wealth of information there. It's a wonderful resource, as is the association. So please, if you have a family member that's been diagnosed or you may suspect the disease, reach out. This is not something any of us can do by ourselves. It's way too big, and the Alzheimer's Association is one of my favorite organizations because of the amazing work that they're doing for our parents. So we'll see you in 3 weeks. Stay safe, and take care.